Okay, I want you to open your Bible to the book of Acts, chapter 17. Let's just kind of launch off from that spot. You know, in our conversation and sharing and dialogue and talking back and forth, the things to me that are coming forth now are phenomenal, and I am probably as much, if not more, excited than I've ever been in my life about what I see. And just like I was talking to that gentleman this morning earlier, I get more excited each day because it unfolds to me more and more and more. And in that unfolding of the truth or revealing or whatever you'd like to call it, what term you'd like to use, it seems to be more freeing. And in that freedom is not a lack of responsibility of being. I think so many people hear freedom without responsibility of being. And that is just not the message at all. I've been trying to say that for 25 or 30 years when people, oh God, you can just go do anything. You can, and Paul says that. You can do anything. But do you think it out? Is it expedient? Is it progressive? What will it bear in the end? Go ahead and cheat your neighbor, you know. Do that, you know. And you think you can justify it in the end? I mean, you know, songs like that. And what's happening now to me is the unfolding or unveiling or the revealing of the truth of freedom brings a greater responsibility of being. To love your neighbor. To not cheat a friend. To not use your freedom as a cloak of bondage for a friend or someone.
Listen, the way you introduced me to it, I was a huge follower of. You talked about our freedom, but at the same time, you talked about somebody that did the work.
Yeah, exactly.
Just sit there and go, I know I can open my arms and I will be attracted to what I want. He didn't.
No, he didn't.
He traveled in the beginning, giving away books out of his trunk that he had bought from his publisher.
Right. The freedom brings responsibility of being.
Public television for free so that it could go out to others. Would say on his recordings, I don't care if other people record my stuff or not. Somebody had to have bought the original. I'm fine with that. Did he not say that?
Oh, yeah. He said, he always encouraged people, duplicate them, give them away, do whatever.
He's
out there.
And he got
a multimillionaire. I ain't no telling. I imagine 20 or 30, maybe more New York Times bestselling books. And to hit the New York Times bestselling list, you have to got to sold at least a million copies. At least a million copies. And I don't know how many. He had 20 or 30 that were New York Times bestsellers. So, yeah, the wealth was, he was extremely wealthy.
And one thing that I got out of that song that we just listened to was how people strive and fight and put down and all that to get that treasure in heaven. Mm-hmm. And then really, the true treasure is being freedom and having peace on the inside.
That is it. The true treasure is the rock within.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the reward in some ethereal place. It's the rock within. That's the true.
Well, the chorus there said, there won't be any trumpet playing on the judgment day. They were making a direct opposite statement of that translation of revelation of the trumpets sound.
That's what I mean. The
on the quote unquote judgment day.
The 60s and 70s were bringing a state of rebellion, but the rebellion was against the religious ideas that had brought such a bondage to the whole human race. That was what they were rebelling against, the bondage. They were trying to promote that freedom. And they did it in their songs and many things. But anyway, this is a wonderful time of the year. Everybody in all religions love this time of the year, the spring, when everything begins to come alive again. It's as if it's been dead, and all of a sudden it seems to come alive. These trees, they have been leafless. bloomless and apparently dead just by looking at them. But now they come alive with the beauty, the green, the blossoms, the everything. It just, and in that is a perennial philosophy. In that philosophy, all of the ancient wisdom is hung. It's taught. It's encouraged. And we are the results of that kind of life that seems to bring it out. And it brings it out in us too. So anyway, and I want you to follow me in this. And gosh, the more you do research and look at what really was true or what really did this say, the picture seems to get both narrower and deeper. And you realize there have been a lot of additions or deletions or things changed or turned. So at least I do. Anyway, Acts 17, verse 22, it says, "Then Paul stood in the midst of Mars Hills, and he said, 'You men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are too superstitious.'" Now, that's the King James translation. If you look at that in a New American Standard or a New Revised English Version or some of the Amplified or some of it, won't say superstition, it'll say religion. The reason it says that is religion and superstition are the exact same word. So that word in the King James, superstition, in the Greek is the same word for religion, or in Latin, religion. It's the same identical word. And religion that is promoted by man, and man's religion is false religion, and it binds you up. It ties you up. But true religion, James, the book of James, talks about true religion. True religion doesn't do that, and the original intent of religion was to bind you back to God. And so it got twisted up. It got twisted up, not just through Catholicism, but it did it through all other religions. All other religions begin to see how politically they could manipulate people and bring religion as an arm or an undergirding foundation to woo people and bind people and get people to become a slave. And you see it everywhere. I mean, it comes up all the time. So the religion that's talked about for the most part is religion that binds you, ties you up, gets you committed to a certain belief system that's against somebody else's belief system. And so when you do that, you pit this belief system against that belief system, and ours is right and theirs is wrong. And so you divide, and in dividing you want to conquer. And we know that. That just seems to be the thing that's happened. That's what we want to get free from, right? Our freedom, the true freedom, is free from that kind of bondage. But it's not to take our freedom to bind other people up. Or at least that's not what I would promote. So Paul goes on, he says in verse 23, "For as I passed by and I beheld your devotions, I found an altar with the inscription to," here's what his inscription was, "to the unknown God, whom therefore you ignorantly worship him." Now everybody say him. Everybody sees that and immediately they designate that to one person in history. And of course, in Christianity, that one person in history would be Jesus. Is that who Paul was talking about? Is that the him that Paul is referring to? Because we fail to realize and recognize that the Apostle Paul supposedly grew up contemporary to Jesus, but not in any of Paul's epistles does he ever mention, not one time, hearing of Jesus feed thousands of people, hearing of Jesus doing miracles, hearing of Jesus going in the temples and making the priests mad. Not one time, period, does Paul ever mention a literal Jesus. Now, that ought to be, to me, that comes up strange, especially if you're growing up in the same area, the same vicinity. I mean, do you not think if there's somebody in North Georgia that began to do miracles and I grew up here, that I would not hear about it, that I would not know about it, that I would not be, how could I not? You know, and to me, those things should be huge questions in our mind. Why does this man not know about this other man. And they grew up together, within the same region together. So anyway, so who would the him Paul's talking about be? And to me, this is the question. And if the him he wants to refer to is Jesus, in what reference is he referring to Jesus? Is he referring to Jesus as a literal man, or is he referring to Jesus as an astrological figure of all of man? Because when you hear the four Gospels out of the mouth of Jesus, when you hear what Jesus is saying, it sounds like what he's saying not just about himself, but he's saying it about all of mankind. When he says, as I am, you are, what I can do, you should be doing also. When he says, the kingdom is within me, is he referring to it just being in him and not in everybody else? When he says, go, if you want to find the kingdom, look within your own heart. So see, is this him? If it be, I'm just putting a great big if there because I can't find that it is, if he's saying that it's referring to a historical character. If the Jesus he's talking about is a historical character, he's talking about him in the reference to it being an astrological Hebrew Adam Kidmon, or in other words, all man that come from the sky or come from the zodiac or come from the power of Elohim. And I realize that statement goes really contrary to the ears of the Christian group of people. So nevertheless, let's just go on and see what he says. He said, whom therefore you ignorantly worship. Well, Paul was saying that they were worshiping him, was he not? Isn't that what he said? He said, you're worshiping him, but you're worshiping him. Paul says you're worshiping him out of ignorance. Now, I'm not sure what he meant by that, but let's just read on a little bit further and see what he says. God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he... Now, I'm thinking God that made the world, he is him that he's saying, that he's referring to. That would be my idea of what he's talking about. God that made the world and all things therein, seeing he is the Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in the temples made with hands. Okay, and I don't know if you're picking up on the controversy that Paul is beginning to allude to right here. He's beginning to say that you're not going to find God, he, the Lord of heaven and earth, him, you're going to find him in the temples that's made by hands. So what is he saying? He's saying he's not in a physical building that you go and worship because it has gold structures or whatever, or because it has a golden arch over the covenant or whatever. He's saying it's not that. Where is he saying it? Verse 25. He said, neither is worshipped with men's hands as though he need anything, seeing he gives to all life and breath and all things. Now, this him that Paul is talking about says right here in verse 25 that he doesn't need anything because he gives everything. Paul's talking about, God, is giving everything. He's giving all life. Does that mean he's giving all life to animals? Does that mean he's giving all life to fish, all life to birds, all life to men? Yeah. Because it says, and breath, and all things. So who's given everything all things? Even if you follow that the word that Paul talks about, which is the Logos, is actually in the Greek, and you take it far back, it becomes the emanation of light. The word Logos becomes the emanation of light, and it's from the emanation of light, vibration comes word. So where do words come from? They come from the movement of light that gives vibration. It gives energy. That's what the Logos referred to was the expression of light as it comes forward. So in that is where all life, all, A-L-L, of life, L-I-F-E, comes from, period. And I think Paul is making that very clear. Verse 26, he says, He hath made of one blood all the nations of men. Can you see that? There's no division here. We're not talking about blacks pitted against whites. We're not talking about Asians pitted against Mexicans. There is no division here. He's saying, and this is very true. Do you realize that if you have the same blood type as an Asian guy, that you can give that Asian guy your blood, or he can give you your blood? Or if you have the same blood type as a black person? I think Marvin and I have the same blood type. Seems like we did. So if something happened to Marvin, I can give Marvin my blood. Or something happens to me, Marvin can give me his blood. So the color of my skin doesn't determine the fact that I have a certain blood type that God gave to all men that begins to be, according to Leviticus, the life source of the physical body, the flesh. And I do know this as a fact. I had a very close friend I grew up with, and he was actually my banker. He had a very poor heart condition, and for over 10 years, they put a pig valve in his heart, and he lived from a pig valve in his heart that kept him alive for over 10 years until finally they put a plastic valve in there. So here, he as a man had a part of a pig in him to keep him alive. Now isn't that pretty crazy, phenomenal, or whatever you want to call it? And after they put the Jody was his name, Jody Parker was his name, and his wife's name was Joy, and they were really precious people. They didn't live far from me, and we grew up together, but Jody was probably about 8 or 10 years older than I was. And Joy said that after they took the heart valve out and put the black valve in, she said at night, when they were laying at night, and she'd get real quiet. She said everything was just real, real quiet. She said she could literally hear that valve click every time it would open and close on his chest. She could hear the thing click. So anyway, and so it went from a pig valve to a plastic valve. Trying to replace the world with plastic. Oh, all right. Look at this. Look at this. I mean, to me, this is just rich, deep. It tears down so many religious ideologies. And it's not complicated to me to see what he's saying right here. Verse 26, He has made of one blood all nations of man. In other words, that refers to all nations of mankind, no matter what skin color they have. So there's not, you know, and everybody tries to, or not everybody, a lot of people go back and try to say that the cradle of all of evolution of mankind come out of Africa, that we all have evolved out of black Africa, and that the race was black. I don't know that there's any foundation of truth in that. I just don't know that to be true. And it could be. To me, it doesn't matter. I do know that everybody has blood, and that life, the life of the flesh is in the blood of the flesh, according to Leviticus. So He has made of all of one blood all nations of mankind for to dwell on all of the face of the earth, and has determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek the Lord, if happily they might feel after Him. And actually, the word Lord here, in our mind of thinking as a Christian, always applies to Jesus. But when you look at the Lord in the Hebrew alphabet, or in the Yod Heh Vav Heh of Genesis 2:4, when it's first introduced, you realize that the Lord is actually referring to the four gases of the earth that builds all of flesh, whether it be human or animal or bird or fish or what, or reptile, it doesn't matter. Those four gases, carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, and oxygen, are the Lord, or in other words, they are the Adonai, the King, or that thing that builds all the physical things that live and exist on this planet. And that's what the word Lord refers to, even though we're taught to think of only one person when you hear the word Lord. But if you go back in ancient Hebrew and you begin to realize that's not what it was referring to. That's not what Paul was referring to. That they should seek the Lord if by haply they might feel after him, that when they find him, though he be not far from every one of us. Did he say everyone? So he was talking to them and he said he's not far from you. Why? Because he's saying he's in you. He's the life that's in you. And then that's verse 28. That's the popular verse that we all hear. And that verse, Paul is quoting this, and I said this a few weeks back, that I actually have a note in my Dake Bible. Dake actually gives the name of this character. But you can find this guy, name, Aratus, A-R-A-T-U-S. You can find his name and Google his name and realize that he was an astrologer. He was a Greek astrologer and a poet and a philosopher. And so when he wrote out of that mind. He wrote out of that understanding. Most of Greek philosophy is written that way. So he says, in him we live, we move, and we have our being. So the him, the he, the Lord is the God that Paul is referring to, which is the same God that you and I are used to. It's the same one that we are referring to. But you know as well as I, when you come here and you're exposed to this, you know it's hard to talk to anybody, especially a Christian, about this idea or this concept. I mean, right? I mean, that, you know, they get upset. You tell them these fabulous stories, when you understand them, begin to have tremendous truths inside them. So I want you to go with me to the Gospel of John. Just turn backwards a book. John chapter 19. And I want you to look at something here with me. John chapter 19. Because we're coming to that time of year. That time of year, of course, being Easter. We're coming to that time of the year that everybody begins to celebrate. There are two times of the year that most people go to church, if they go to church, period. The two times of the year. And that would be Christmas and what?
Easter.
Christmas and Easter. Those would be the two times of the year that most everyone go to church. If they don't go to church any other time, they go those two times. Okay, I'm going to put the four cardinal points. March, and the reason I'm going to do this is because when you get this circle representing Milky Way galaxy or the universe or God or whatever, you know, in ancient mythology, if you wanted to draw picture of God, you just draw a circle. And the reason you did that was it's to designate no time, no end. It's forever. We use that word eternal. It's non-ending. You can't find a place it stops. You can't find a place it starts. It just continues. So when you take that and you put a dot in the middle of it, they call that a monad. The dot is where this circle focused. In other words, it's where it had an idea. And the idea, of course, was its creation. That's the general consensus behind that. But when you take the circle and then you put the cross in it, you have the solstice, the vertical line, the solstice. It just does tremendous good for anyone to understand the solstice and the equinox. We hear them, we talk about them, but mostly we only talk about them like as in nature. But what do they have to do with you and me? Everything. Because in this is life. You see, the very fact this morning that you rose up and you saw the sun when it rose above the horizon, the equator, the horizon, when it rose above the horizon and you woke up and you made contact with life, you could say, hallelujah, I'm alive again today. I got another day. You know, I'm upright again. I'm standing up. Hallelujah. Well, if you went to bed and you exited from here at sunset into darkness and you didn't get up this morning, then guess what? You just exited out of this dimension. You just went back into another dimension. you took your suit off, left your suit wherever you laid your suit down. You know, and there it lays. There it is. But you didn't quit. You didn't cease because you are eternal as God is eternal because you're a chip off the old block. Or as someone would say, you're a drop out of the ocean of what God is. But you are a drop, and in that drop contains everything the ocean has or offers. And that's who we are. You can't not be that. That's just simply who you are. But we have this idea because of religion, we're so dumbed down. You see, the sun moves on this thing on a daily basis. The sun moves on this wheel on a yearly basis. The sun moves on this wheel on a great year basis. So it not only does it every 24 hours, not only does it every 365 days, it also does it every 2,000, or we'll just round it out to say 24,000. So 24,000 years can just be as one day in the mind of God, as well as one day, 24 hours can be a day in the mind of God. I mean, all of these things are so real, we just lose contact with them. And we lose contact with this very life that Paul is talking about that is him in me. And the life I live, I don't live by my own ability or by my, I live it by the ability of the God that's inside me. And if I want to call him Jesus, then fine. If I call him Buddha, fine. But I recognize I'm living my life by him. H-I-M. So, I know it's offensive. I don't mean it to be, but I'm E-L-O-H-Y-M or E-L-O-H-I-M is the same thing. Him. Him. Elohim. Elohim. This is the Elohim. The circle of the zodiac is the Elohim. And I make an emphasis about that. Now, in John 19, and we're going to look at this passage some more over the next several weeks, because when is Easter? It's coming up here in a few weeks, isn't it? I can't remember. It's not next Sunday, but is it the next? Next Sunday is the 17th. Is it the 25th? 24th, 25th?
I don't know. It's X amount of Sundays into the year. Sometimes it falls in April, sometimes it falls in March.
Right, it rotates back and forth. It rotates on a...
X amount of Sundays.
Four, right, 1 year.
I'm looking at my calendar and it's not marked.
Your calendar does not even mark Easter. Boy, that's shame. That is a shame right there. That. Wow. Well, I'm thinking, anyway, we're coming up on that time, and I wanted to share some more things about it. It's just so much, it's just really coming, unfolding and coming forth to me right now at this time that it's something that we can connect with. And so much of the Old Testament scriptures connect to it. And I wanted to use that, and I wanted to use this story in John's gospel to kind of launch from that, as well as what Paul says there in Acts. In him we live, move, and have our being. Who is the him? It's the God that's inside you. It's the life that you live by. No matter who you are, what your skin color is, or anything about you, it's who you are. Okay, it goes to all the way to the end of April. Okay, so we are a good month out from Easter. Okay, then that would probably, then next year it would come toward the middle and then toward the front, and then it rotates 1 week every year.
I know it takes them out of Sunday.
Okay. All right, so here in this passage of Scripture, I want you to look at this with me in John chapter 19, verse 16. It says, "Then delivered he him therefore unto them to be crucified, and they took Jesus and they led him away. And he, bearing his cross. This is his cross. He's bearing this cross. And I want to show you why he's bearing this. This is his cross. And I put this up here. And I want you to... I want to show you something about this. This is this color cross is going to be my cross. Okay? This is February the 19th. And this is May 21st. Okay? May the 21st, and I'm going to share some things about May the 21st. My dad released his seed. And this is a marvelous thing when you start to see it. My dad released his seed. This is my cross right here. This, the way I have this. When I go February the 19th and go directly, diagonal across from here, I would come up to August the 21st. I would come up right there. That would be my horizontal cross at an angle. And then when I come to my solstice cross, it would be from May the 21st down to November. Let's see there, September, November the 21st. That would be my. And you see that. You can. I hope you can clearly see that on this chart. And I know you can. So this would be my cross. So when Jesus said in the Gospel of John, for me to take up my cross, what did he mean when he said that? Well, this is what he meant. He meant me to, this is my cross because this is Jesus' cross called the cardinal cross. Jesus' cross is always fixed on these points. And it's on these points that Jesus' story is told. If you think about it and you look at his points, he calls his mother, just the opposite from here, Virgo, because you see how he does his solstice there? He would go across this way and he would pull in Virgo as a part of his, and that's what the Virgo is, the virgin. Isn't that how the story goes? The virgin bore the child? So that would be his cross. And then, of course, you would see June 21st and December the 21st. December the 21st is one of the most outstanding, profound stories that we can see. The 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 24th, and the 25th. On June the 25th, it's when the Son, S-U-N, is born again. And that's also where we get the word soul test. You understand that? Soul test. Soul, Son, test or stess, stand still. So what happens is the Son stands still, and then there is on the northern part of the continent, on the northern part of the continent, above Russia, even up into the other portions of Alaska and Canada, all across that whole northern area, 3.5 days, you cannot see the sun. Now, if you woke up here in North Georgia one day and it was kind of bright and there wasn't a cloud in the sky and you couldn't see the sun, would you get a little hysterical? No, you would just go plumb crazy. You would think, my God, where did the sun go? Oh, my God, the world's coming to the end. You'd be like Chicken Bee-Little. You'd thinking, oh, my God, it's all come to an end. There ain't no more sun. Why? Because it's gone. You can't see it. You got a little light to go by, but you cannot visibly see the sun in the sky. It ain't there. Well, that's exactly how it is for 3.5 days on the northern part of the hemisphere of this globe. You cannot see the sun for 3.5. All ancient mythology is built on this phenomenal story. And it's in this story that life begins and ends. All life begins and ends right here from December the 21st to December the 25th. Yours did. Your life died and it began again mythologically. Not literally. That's where we lose it. In the story, in the phenomenon of the story, you have to realize you could have buried every corrupt thing you did at that point in time and woke up on the 25th, born again, brand new, if you would leave it behind you. If you would. Choice is always yours, always mine. And move out again. Well, the same thing is true on March the 21st when we come to the equinox. This one, which is Easter, and this one, which is called Christmas in American or Western mindset, Christianity, these are the two most important ones. They're not the two most important ones in other religious ideologies. In other religious ideologies, the most important one are all four of them. In Judaism, three of them. Even though this one does have an important part in Judaism, but the three, March the 21st, June the 21st, and September the 21st, are the three most important ones in Judaism. Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. Every Christian's heard of those. They haven't heard of all seven of the feasts. Some of them have. Some of them have. But they've definitely heard of those three feasts, right? Because it's on this feast right here where John is writing this story. He's writing this story concerning this feast, the Feast of Passover. And of course, the Old Testament scriptures are very elaborate on the Feast of Passover and what the Feast of Passover is about. The sacrifice of the lamb. Why do they sacrifice the lamb? Well, why are they slaying the lamb? What's the purpose behind it? Why are they shedding the blood of the lamb? It's the release of that life in exchange for your life. Is that correct? Huh? Isn't that what you're always told? Yeah, that's the whole idea behind that act. And so that becomes a very important figure, a very important time for all of us. So here's what's happening. Verse 17, and he bearing his cross, Jesus bearing his cross, because Jesus is the representative of all of mankind, so he's bearing the cardinal cross. So in bearing the cardinal cross, he bears the representation of all of the points, these key points, March 21st, June 21st, September 21st, and December the 21st, 25th. He's bearing these important points as humanity. You see, you have those important points as a part of the making of you as humanity. I show you that. Because you go from, and this is biologically, and this is anatomically correct for every human being. I don't care what color of skin that they have. The day that my daddy released the seed had been designed according to the Genesis 1, chapter 1 through chapter 2, verse 7 pattern. The seed had been designed according to that pattern to build me. And what I mean when I say that is that this seed, when it released, it began to build an embryo. E-M-B. How do you spell embryo? E-M-B. R-Y. Yeah, I thought it had a... It began to build an embryo where? In the Garden of Eden. The Garden of Eden where? In the womb of my mom. Listen to that. It began to build it. It's building it. Now, how did I look to start with? I look just like this. To start with. I looked, but so small you couldn't see it. Right? Because all of a sudden, this miracle began to take place, and this began to split and split and split. And all of a sudden, so the first thing that I looked like was a what? Exactly. I went through the worm stage. That's called an embryo. And in that worm stage, that worm kind of grew a little bit and began to look like an insect. And guess what? As there for just a short period of time, it looked like a tadpole or a fish. It even actually goes through those stages of tadpole fish. So, in the Genesis 1 story, when it starts to talking about the fish of the sea, it's actually talking about me in an embryo stage in the womb of my mama. And then all of a sudden, this little critter begins to take on other aspects of his being. And it goes through this stage called a fetus stage. Now, at the stage of fetus, and this only happens, I'm not sure exactly on the amount of weeks, but I'm going to get that down because I've got some things brewing in my spirit on finding out more and more about the embryo stage. But I'll show you this as it begins to unfold itself in Genesis chapter 1, because again, I'm telling you, Genesis chapter 1 is a biological, anatomical blueprint, platform, building blocks of building you to be the Him in the earth. I will promise you it's that. I know it's that, and I can see it very clearly. So you go from the embryo to becoming a fetus, which at the fetus stage you begin to look and you can take on the characteristics of an animal as you begin to evolve in the womb of your mom, as Him is building you. Without a hammer, without a saw. And then you go from the fetus stage until you become a full-blown human, an Adam, a man of God, or a woman of God, whatever, and you're, boom, you're releasing, you are pushed out. So verse 17 again, and He, bearing His cross, went forth into a place called the skull, which is called in Hebrew Golgotha. In Hebrew, it's called Golgotha. In Hebrew, you spell Golgotha with the gimel, which has a 3 value. I'll just spell it for you right here. That's a lamed, has a 30. Gimel has a 3. Lamed has a 30. And a tav has a 400 value. Tav. So that's how you spell Golgotha in Hebrew. Gimel, lamed, gimel, lamed, tav. And when you do gematria on this, watch what it says. 430, 3, 60, 3, 6. So that's 466, right? Which equals 6 and 4 is 10, and 6 is 16, which equals 7. 7 are the major building blocks to build the physical body, the Adam Kidmon, the God-man in the sky. In other words, Jesus on the cardinal cross. It's the same thing. So if I'm going to go back to ancient Hebrew and I'm talking about the Adam Kidmon, it's the same story of Jesus. It's Jesus being crucified on the cross. Crucified just simply means hung there as a human being. He's hung there. Or you could actually say He's built there. So where's all this taking place? It's taking place on Golgotha. Golgotha is called the skull. It's the place of the skull, right? Isn't that how you have always been taught it? He's got a big nose, hasn't he? That would make him a real Hebrew. I'm not getting in trouble saying that, huh? Okay. My Uncle John had a big nose. The skull, right here. This is where it starts. That's what happened in the womb. You don't realize up here is what starts first. It didn't start down here first. It didn't start in your lower extremity. It started up here. And it unfolded itself from up here. The mind. Knowledge, gnosis, the soul. The soul brought this knowledge, this information. Spirit empowered it, soul knew it. Soul knows it, spirit powers it. And spirit's not biased. Spirit's all powerful. You think it, spirit will build it. Does it build things that we shouldn't? It will. Simply because it's a power. It's power. It's the power to do. It's the power to build. It's the power to be. So here at the place of the skull, here at the Golgotha, at this place, God begins to build the embryo in the womb of your mother that is to grow to become a fetus, and is doing it all in this ocean of water. And you go through the stages just exactly like this Genesis story unfold the stages, just exactly like if you were a plant or you were a worm or you were a fowl or you were a fish or you were a cow or and then a man. A man that God has built to be as God is. So, and you come down to verse 20. Come down to verse 28 of this same passage. I want you to see this. Verse 28 says, after this, Jesus, knowing that all things were now accomplished, that the scripture might be fulfilled, said, I thirst. Now there was set a vessel full of vinegar that they filled a sponge with vinegar and put it upon a hyssop, put it to his mouth. When Jesus therefore had received the vinegar, he said, it is finished. He bowed his head and he gave up the ghost. And the Jews therefore, because it was the preparation that the bodies should not remain on the cross on the Sabbath. Sabbath, okay. Sabbath. S-A-B-B-A-T-H. Sabbath is not the Sabbath. S-E-V-E-N-T-H. Okay. This is the Sabbath. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This is the seventh. This is the seventh right here, starting from the lower extremity. Or I can count up here and come down and say that the pelvic is the seventh. Okay. That's the baby in the belly, baby in the mama's womb. Now then, notice what he says. He said, therefore, because it was the preparation that the body should not remain upon the cross on the Sabbath, S-A-B-B-A-T-H. Okay? Now you automatically would take in the idea right here then, was this taking place on Saturday? If Saturday was the Jewish Sabbath, was this happening on Saturday? Because he's got to rise here in 3.5. He's in the. How long is he in the tomb? How long is the earth buried here? 3.5 days. And the whole story of Jesus is being about him being buried in the earth 3.5 days. Should remain on the cross because it was the Sabbath. And then notice the parentheses. If you have a King James Bible, which you can have another one, it still should say the same thing. It says, for that Sabbath day was a high day. Go with me now to the book of Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 23. Now these Sabbaths that are listed here in Exodus, just hold your place right there in Exodus 23 and go over to Genesis chapter 2. Just real quickly, and I want you to flip back and forth with me and look at this. Yeah, you go into Leviticus 23, and then also go over to Genesis chapter 2 and just, you know, fold your page there where we can flip back and forth and look at both of these. I want you to see something. Okay, Leviticus chapter 23, verse 3 says, 6 days shall work be done, but on the Sabbath, the Sabbath is the Sabbath of rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in your dwellings. Now, what I want you to notice is, and then look at Genesis chapter 2, verse 1. It says, thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and the host of all the hosts of them. And on the seventh day, God ended his work. Now the word Sabbath, S-A-B-B-A-T-H, is not listed here in Genesis in English. Okay? It's just not there. The word Sabbath is. So the first place that we actually find Sabbath, S-A-B-B-A-T-H, we actually find it in Exodus. But here in Leviticus is where we begin to find a definition for it. In other words, the Sabbath, S-A-B-B-A-T-H, never comes on the Sabbath. It's not the seventh day. It never falls on the Sabbath. It may fall on Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday or Friday or Monday. But it don't ever fall on the seventh day. The Sabbath is not the seventh. How that sounds with my English vernacular, especially Southern dialect, The Sabbath is never the seventh. But in the Sabbath, S-E-V-V-E-N-T-H, are all of the Sabbaths. Did you get that? Within the Sabbath, S-E-V-E-N-T-H, are all of the Sabbath. In other words, within the skull, within the head, are all of the Sabbaths, S-A-B-B. And in the Sabbaths are where peace and freedom are deposited, and from peace and freedom is where you find true rest. You don't get rest because you just take and prop your feet up and you lay yourself back. How many of you ever laid back and slept all night and got up as tired as you did before you went to bed? And you didn't get a lot of rest. Huh? It happens to a lot of us, don't it? A lot of times we, yeah. Oh yeah, I laid down, I closed my eyes some last night. But I think I'm tireder this morning than I was before I went to bed last night. Did I get any rest? No, I didn't get true rest. Rest comes from the Sabbath, S-A-B-B-A-T-H, and realizing the Sabbath is in the Sabbath, and it's in the Sabbath that I find peace and freedom. When I'm at peace, I rest. If I'm not at peace, do you understand? Knowing your cross, understanding your cross, if you and I do nothing for the rest of our lives but try to understand my cross, try to understand myself, try to get to know myself, try to get familiar with all of my strengths and my weaknesses, try to get familiar with my good points and my bad points, we all have them. And you see, when you encounter someone else, and you will, we do. We are a people that are designed to socialize. And not just socialize, we're designed to have a companion. Most people want to have a companion. You know, I mean, it's not a prerequisite. You don't have to have a so-called companion. You can socialize and be a companion with a lot of people. But we're a people that are designed to be a companion. And we try to judge our companion off of our sign, or we try to, when I say judge, analyze, listen to, draw information from our companion based off of their zodiacal sign when we don't know their zodiac, we don't know our own, and we make judgments against them because they said something or did something or acted this way or didn't act this way by a response to something I said or did. Does that make any sense to you? In other words, if I am making a judgment against a companion or a partner of mine, and I don't realize that that companion or that partner only lives and moves out of their being of who they are made to be by their astrological chart. In other words, their wheel designs them. It gives them their power, their ability to be. It gives them their power, their ability to make decisions. And when they make decisions and they make choices, it might not be the decision and choice you'd make because of your sign and your character. Do you understand that? So, in other words, if I am over here and I am a ram, I think like the ram, my attributes are drawn from the ram, which is the first, March 21st, to April the 20th, if I'm thinking like that with my opposite sign over here of Libra, the judgment, that would make up character of who I am. And so I would think from this mindset. Well, if my thinking from this mindset is coupled with someone thinking from the mindset of Pisces and Virgo, would our thinking be the same? No. You wouldn't even see things the same. Have you ever seen something one way and your companion saw it another way? And what come out of that?
words.
Exactly. That's exactly what come out of it. Sometimes those words could have been very heated. Why? Because you saw it different. Why? Because you are different. And we don't give somebody else the opportunity to be who they are. You can't make them not be who they are. See, you can't make me not be what my astrological sign has branded me to be. That's who I am. This is who I really am. This is how I think. Now, you may not think that way. And do you know what? That's perfectly okay. But where harmony comes, do you understand what harmony is? Harmony is to take sounds that don't sound alike and blend them together. Is that not true? What does harmony bring? Harmony brings symmetry. And what does all of that bring? It brings a beautiful melody. It takes many times the opposites to make things beautiful. But we don't know this science. But yet, Scripture is inundated with this science. It's all about this science. So that I can learn that in the seventh, the crown in glory... Gosh, can you just hear that? The S-E-V-E-N. Where is the throne of God? Where is the throne? You can point to the top of your head. You can point to Golgotha. You can point to the skull and say, the throne of God is in here. The 12 paired cranial nerve, that's where the throne sits. The 24 elders are in my head. Well, is the throne of God where the peace of God is at? Yeah! It's the throne of God where the liberty of God... Yeah! But the people think differently from their cardinal cross. Yes, everybody does. You are bound to. So we grow from the embryo to the fetus to the fully developed God, man, woman, being. And then mama pushes us out of the garden and says, okay, time for you to get out here and play in the evil world. The word evil actually can also be used for the word elemental or elementary. And the thing about this is, I'll close with this. We just start. And like I said, we're just going to scratch the surface a little because I want to dig a lot around here over through this Easter period because there's so much here. These stories in the Bible are built off this stuff. And I want to dig around here. So we're just going to continue to scratch this ground and see what we can get out of it. So when this embryo begins to grow in the womb of my mom, this embryo coupled with the power of soul and spirit, this embryo begins to develop so that it becomes a fully grown me. And then God... through my mom, pushes me out and says, okay, go play in the elementary. But not without governors or tutors. Even though you're born with the power of all of it. Can y'all hear a scripture I'm quoting? Paul says, even though you are governor of the whole thing, you're not turned loose to rule it. Why? You're still under training. You know, it's a sad shame to be 70 or 80 year old and still be under training because we've never been taught the truth. That's where we are as an entire society. As an entire society now, we're living and dying and never finding out the truth of who we really are. And hallelujah, I'm thinking, that's why I'm saying I'm more excited now than I've ever been because I'm beginning to see who I am. I'm beginning to find out things I don't like about me. I'm beginning to find out things that are strong about me. Things that are weak about me. I'm beginning to find out who I am. Now, I've never had that thought, that focus in my entire life. But here I am now, at my age, starting to see this, starting to find out. And you know what? What that does for me? Puts me in a place of peace and freedom and give you the liberty to be who you are. Without my judgment, without my condemnation, I can let people be who and what they are. And in that's where we will begin to find out that the Sabbaths, S-A-B-B-A-T-H, Sabbaths, are all deposited in the Sabbath. And we'll see that. We'll begin to understand it. Okay? That gets your wheels to turning, thinking. Okay, we'll just quit right there.